ladies and gentlemen. I'm Bill McAllister. It's my pleasant duty this morning to welcome you to this notable event in the history of Oregon. The administration to Dave Frohnmayer of his oath of office as Attorney General. The taking of the oath at this time means that Dave will have to have no further ceremony before he becomes Attorney General. When the clock strikes midnight on January 4th, Dave will be our new Attorney General. Now, Dave could have selected any date after he was elected until his term of office begins to be sworn in. But he chose this day, December 30th, because it was his 10th anniversary of his wedding. It is not very often that any of us have an opportunity to celebrate our wedding anniversary. Such a unique and thrilling experience. Now, I know this is a happy event for all of you who are gathered here, and because it is a thrilling climax to all the time, talent, and plain hard work that you dedicated to the election of Dave to this office. You can be very proud because we know that without that hard work and dedication, which you performed, this event would not be taking place. Dave, of course, is very grateful to you, and he'll have an opportunity later in the program to personally express that gratitude. Now, Dave was fortunate indeed to have as his most influential and effective supporter the Honorable Atiyah, Governor of Oregon. The governor lost no opportunity to tell the voters to vote for Dave, and vast numbers of them took his advice. The Attorney General is the governor's official attorney, and it was obvious that the governor wanted a good one. The governor has honored us by his presence here this morning, and I understand wants to make a few remarks about his new Attorney General. Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Vic Atiyah, Governor of Oregon.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here to observe the ceremony of swearing in of Dave. You are his friends, and it's impressive the number of you that have come to watch this ceremony. And Dave is a friend of mine. But beyond that, our mutual relationship begins to change, yours and mine. Because besides being a friend, the relationship of an attorney general is quite unique in terms of a governor of the state. A governor, as I've observed over the years and in my own experience, needs to depend upon the skill and ability of the attorney general, and also to feel full confidence in that person's deliverance of an opinion that it is based upon the law as best they see it, and that there is no concern in regard to the reason for the decision. Since becoming governor of Oregon, I have been fortunate. First, Jim Redden as attorney general, a person in whom I had a great deal of confidence, both in his integrity and his legal skill. I had the privilege of appointing Jim Brown as attorney general, and that relationship continued. And now I have and can depend upon Dave Frohnmayer, clearly a very skilled person in the law and one of the highest integrity. And it brings me considerable degree of pleasure and joy looking in the future, knowing the difficult problems that we will be facing, that there is such an Attorney General, one of which we all can be very proud. I tell you, I'm proud of the ones I've served with, and I'm certainly looking forward to working with my good friend and skilled advocate, Dave Frohmeyer. It's a joy for me to watch the ceremonies that will be for you. It brings back the memories of my own swearing in this chamber. And as I looked out, I thought, my goodness, he's got more than I did when I was sworn in. But it is good. It's a wonderful day. The sun's shining. As I started my inaugural address, it's a beautiful day in Oregon. And in fact, it is a beautiful day in Oregon for Oregonians, and not just the weather. It's a beautiful day when we swear in a person like Dave Frohmeyer as our leading attorney in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
This occasion is a special pleasure for me because I've known Dave Frohmeyer since his boyhood and have the greatest admiration for him and particularly for his decision to devote his great talents in public service. The citizens of Oregon are indeed fortunate to have a man of Dave's talents to serve in this important position. And I hope that his service to the state of Oregon will continue for some time to come. Now, this occasion is also a special pleasure for me, if you'll pardon a personal note, because it brings me back to the scene of my legislative career, of which I have many pleasant memories. I'm not going to bore you with any details, but I do want to say that I had the privilege of serving in the House of Representatives in the first session of the legislature, which was held in this building. And also in 1934, I had the privilege of serving as Speaker of the House in the last session of the Oregon legislature, which finished its work and adjourned in less than 60 days. Now, Dave is invited to this ceremony, the attorney generals who have preceded him in that office. It is worthy of note that all of the living former attorneys general of Oregon are present here today to pay their respects and express their confidence and admiration for the latest successor, Dave Frohmeyer. First, I'll introduce the President Attorney General, James M. Brown. Jim served as a law clerk for Justice Denneke, who is now Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, where I became acquainted with Jim. He was an excellent law clerk and has had a fine career as an assistant district attorney, as district attorney of Benton County, and as an assistant attorney general before his appointment to the office of Attorney General as related by Governor Attia. When his predecessor resigned early this year, Jim was appointed to serve as Attorney General and is still serving until the end of this year. I present our present Attorney General, James M. Brown. Please stand. Next in order is the Honorable James Redden, now Judge of the United States District Court for the District of Oregon. James Redden and I became friends when we were both practicing law in Medford. Jim served three sessions, I think, in the Oregon legislature. He then served a term as state treasurer, and then was elected attorney general. He resigned early this year when he was appointed to the federal bench. I present the Honorable James Redden, Judge of the District Court of the United States for the District of Oregon. The next in order of seniority is the Honorable Lee Johnson, who served as Attorney General from May 1969 to January 1977, when he became Judge of the Oregon Court of Appeals. Judge Johnson resigned as the Judge of the Court of Appeals to become or to accept an appointment as Executive Assistant to the Governor of Oregon, which position he is now serving. I present the Honorable Lee Johnson. And the attorney, former Attorney General who served the longest term in office was Robert Y. Thornton. He is now a judge of the Court of the Oregon Court of Appeals. Judge Thornton served as Attorney General from January 3, 1953 to May 1969, a total of 16 years. I present the Honorable Robert Y. Thornton, Judge of the Oregon Court of Appeals. And now I want to introduce Dave's family, which is a pleasant task. I went to Medford to practice law in 1931, and shortly thereafter, Dave's father, Otto Frohnmeyer, came to Medford to practice law. We practiced law in the same community for 25 years. During that period, the Frohnmeyer children grew up and went to school with the McAllister children. Dave's father and I became close friends, and our families were close friends. It gives me great pleasure to introduce one of the leading attorneys of Southern Oregon, Dave's father, Otto Frohnmeyer. And Dave's lovely mother, Maribel Frohnmeyer. Dave's brother, John Frohnmeyer, was a Portland attorney. John, stand up. And his wife, Leah, and their children who are seated with them. Now I come to Dave's closest family. His wife, Lynn, was seated on the rostrum. Stand up, Lynn. She will have a part to play in the administration of Dave's home in a few moments. And Dave and Lynn's three children, Chris, Kirsten, Mark, and Katie. Where are they seated? Dean Orlando John Hollis was on the faculty of the law school of the University of Oregon for 43 years. I think probably longer than any other professor. He was dean of the University of Law School for 23 years. During that time, he had as a law student Dave's father, Otto Frohnmeyer, and at a later time had as a law student Dave's brother, John. Dave did not attend the University of Oregon Law School, but he did serve on the faculty of the law school with Orlando Hollis for about 5 years. During that time, Dave and Dean Hollis became good friends, and Dave has invited Dean Hollis to make a short talk this morning about the Office of Attorney General and the responsibilities which Dave will be assuming as he takes this office. Dean Hollis is retired from the law school faculty, but will always be known affectionately by the lawyers of Oregon as Dean John Orlando Hollis. I present him to you.
Justice McAllister, Your Excellency, Justice Lindy,
ladies and gentlemen. When Mr. Frohnmayer called me some 10 days ago to ask whether I would participate in this swearing-in ceremony, he said that he would like for me to say something about the history of the Office of Attorney General in Oregon and to survey the previous men who had held that office. I told him I would be glad to do so. I immediately started on the task of getting some facts together. And since Mr. Frohnmayer has spent many years in the classroom, and I as well, I naturally assumed that I would have the usual 50 minutes for that assignment. You can imagine how crushed I was when I received a telephone call as recently as last Friday from Mrs. Sue Juba, who told me that the objective was to keep this a very tight ceremony and that I might have 10 to 12 minutes. Whenever the arranger of a ceremony gives a time frame, you may be sure that what is really desired is the shorter of the two. However, since this ceremony, after all, is Mr. Frohnmayer's, I consider his original assignment the overriding. First of all, I must say to you in all frankness that we are here today to witness the swearing in of a new incumbent of an office which is not a constitutional office. But that does not mean you are to jump to the conclusion that he is about to occupy an unconstitutional office. The Oregon Constitution, approved by the people of Oregon in 1857, contained no provision for the office of Attorney General. In fact, the office was not established in Oregon until 1891, when the legislature adopted an act providing for that office. Who took care of the state's legal business prior to that time? It was taken care of by the hiring of individual members of the bar to represent the state in particular cases or to deal with a particular problem. At last count, Oregon is one of only five states in which the office is statutory rather than constitutional. This means, of course, that any incumbent of the office needs to assume the office and execute the duties of it with some humility, because that august body, the Oregon legislature, since it created the office, could abolish it. Has that ever been done in this country? Indeed it has. There have been times when states have gone for periods of 20 to 30 years without an attorney general after the office had once been established and was later abolished. To maintain respectability with the growing state government, it was determined by the legislature in 1947 that we should not simply have the office of attorney general, but that we should have a Department of Justice so that it would be symmetrical with the department of this and that and other departments in the state government. That act provided that the attorney general should be the head of the department and the chief law officer for the state and all of its departments. No public official in Oregon, no department of the state government, has any legal authority for spending any state money for the services of a lawyer. Such services are under the direction and control of the Attorney General of Oregon. And then, like other departments, as it grew, it came to have divisions. The current Oregon Blue Book lists no less than 9 divisions in the Department of Justice. To get the most recent word on the number of personnel in the Department of Justice, I called the Attorney General's office as recently as yesterday, and the lady who answered the phone said she would call the personnel department to get the very latest count for me. And here it is. Other than the Attorney General, 106 assistant attorneys general. Supporting staff, meaning investigators, secretaries, and other specialized personnel, 353, for a total of 459. So the office has come a long way since that original attorney general was provided for, and the legislation of 1891 did not provide for a single assistant to the attorney general. When I made the call to the Attorney General's office yesterday, I also had in mind to ask a second question. What is the current budget for the maintenance of the Department of Justice in Oregon? After I received that figure of 459, I decided that both you and I would be happier this morning if we didn't know it, so I did not ask the question. The list of those who have held the office of Attorney General in Oregon is an interesting one. And first of all, there was George E. Chamberlain, a Democrat. He held the office from 1891 until 1895. I could not help but think, as I looked up some of the facts about George E. Chamberlain's tenure and experience, that after all, things changed very little over the generations of our state history. He was appointed by Sylvester Penoyer, the governor at that time, and Governor Penoyer, I believe, is the only incumbent of the office who was a member of the Democrat People's Party, not Democratic, but Democrat People's Party. It was not long after Mr. Chamberlain assumed office than a litigious citizen in Linn County decided that Mr. Chamberlain, although so recently appointed, would need to stand for election in the general election of 1892. Bear in mind that we did not have primaries at this time, and the general election, by the way, was held in May each year. So the citizen filed a mandamus proceeding to require the county clerk to amend the notice of election to include the office of attorney general. Apparently, the clerk and Mr. Chamberlain and others thought that he was in office until the general election of 1894. The circuit court held that the citizen's interpretation was correct and that indeed, if Mr. Chamberlain wished to remain in the office, he would have to stand for election in 1892. That opinion was affirmed by the Supreme Court of Oregon, which then consisted of 3 justices. And then, as now, all justices did not see eye to eye, but 2 of them affirmed the decision of the circuit court. And so Mr. Chamberlain was nominated by his party, and he ran in 1892, and he was elected for that 2-year term. The history of George E. Chamberlain after leaving the Attorney General's office is an interesting one, and I would like to tell you a bit about it, and yet I do so with some hesitation because I am afraid that it might implant certain ideas in the mind of the incoming Attorney General, ideas which I am sure have never occurred to him before. In 1902, George E. Chamberlain was elected governor of Oregon. He was reelected in 1906. He resigned the office in 1909 because he was elected by the legislature to serve in the Senate of the United States. He was reelected by the people of Oregon for a second term in 1914. In short, Senator Chamberlain had the interesting experience of straddling that period when we did away by the adoption of the 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution of the election of senators by legislatures and provided for their direct election by the people. Senator Chamberlain had the interesting experience of becoming the chairman of the Military Affairs Committee of the United States Senate and served in that capacity during World War I. He became unhappy with what was then called the War Department. He made a public speech, even suggesting that a special commission should be set up by the president to aid the slow-moving War Department in the conduct of our activities during World War I. That did not meet with the approval of President Wilson, and he fell into disfavor, and he was not reelected to the Senate in 1920. The second Attorney General of Oregon was none other than Cicero M. Eidelman, a Republican. He was the first Attorney General to be elected to and to serve a full four-year term. In an interview with Cicero Eidelman, published in the Oregon Journal in 1938, Mr. Eidelman gave something of his history. This, I thought, was an interesting fact. He said that when he was a boy and attending school in Ohio, which was his native state, that a boyhood and schooltime friend of his was Warren G. Harding. And in 1891, when Mr. Harding took unto himself a wife, whether first or second, I do not recall, the couple came to Oregon on their honeymoon and spent 1 week at the home of Cicero Eidelman. The Oregon Blue Book of that time reported that his, and now let me quote directly, early education and initiation into the practical affairs of life were had in his home state of Ohio, and that he devoted all the time at his disposal to the study of law, end of quote. The last part of that quotation was of particular interest to me because one immediately asks, well, time at his disposal after doing what else? That is exactly the kind of story I heard over the years from some of my law students performing at less than satisfactory levels. Dean, I spend all the time at my disposal in the library. But my question was, pray tell, what came first before that disposable time? It was said that Mr. Eidelman suffered from heart palpitation, as the term then went, that he was a very nervous individual, and on various occasions he found it necessary to leave the courtroom because of nervous tension. But can you imagine the psychological effect of an attorney general's opinion of that day? Let us assume that some local official is asked for an opinion as to what a particular statute means. he gets Mr. Eidelman's opinion. A citizen comes to that official's office and says, "This is what it means." And the official says, "I beg your pardon, sir. The law is otherwise." Citizen: "Who says so?" Officer: "Cicero." No response. Cicero Eidelman was followed in the office by D.R.N. Blackburn, who served for one term. His salary was $3,600. He is the only attorney general who had three initials other than his surname. The next attorney general was A.M. Crawford, who served for 12 years, three terms. He was the first attorney general in the history of our state to serve more than one term. I was able to read two of his biennial reports to the governor and to the legislature. And in one of them, he told this sad story that the state of Oregon had been sued by the state of Washington in the Supreme Court of the United States, and that he, Mr. Crawford, with the assistance of the senior senator from the state of Oregon, had been able to represent Oregon's interests. But there had been expenses incurred of some $2,000, and that the legislature had failed and refused to appropriate one red cent toward those expenses. And he made it known that he would expect better treatment in the upcoming session of the legislature. Mr. Crawford was followed in office by the fifth Attorney General, George M. Brown. He was elected in 1914 and re-elected for a second term in 1918, but he resigned in 1920 to accept an appointment to the Supreme Court of Oregon, and he served as a justice of the Supreme Court of Oregon until 1933. The next Attorney General was I.H. Van Winkle, a Republican. By the way, I neglected to call these off, but each name I have mentioned after George E. Chamberlain was a Republican. I.H. Van Winkle was appointed by Governor Ben Olcott, a name that will be remembered by some in the audience. He was then elected the same year he was appointed, in 1920, and he was re-elected five times. He is the only Attorney General to die in office. And his total period of service, longer than any other Attorney General in the history of our state, was 23 years and 2 months. He was a graduate of Willamette University Law School. He taught law there for a few years before becoming Attorney General. He was very active in Oregon Republican affairs. The next Attorney General, also a Republican, was George Nooner, who served for some 10 years. He was appointed to the office by Governor Earl Snell. He was then reelected twice. He was a practicing lawyer in Roseburg before his appointment to the office of Attorney General. He, too, was a graduate of Willamette University Law School. He had previously served as city attorney of Roseburg and as district attorney for Douglas County for two terms. We then come to the eighth Attorney General, who has already been presented to you and something of his service has been told to you. Mr. Thornton was elected in 1952 and re-elected in 56, 60, and 64. And he was the first Democrat to hold the Attorney General's office since George E. Chamberlain's term expired in 1895. He served, as Justice McAllister has pointed out, 16 years and 4 months, the second longest term of any Attorney General. He is undoubtedly the only Attorney General in the history of Oregon who is fluent in the Japanese language. and self-taught, if you please. He was succeeded by Lee Johnson, a Republican, who was elected in 68 and again in 72. Mr. Johnson is a graduate of Stanford University Law School, and he served as law review editor at that school. He served in the House of Representatives for two terms, and Justice McAllister has already pointed out to you his subsequent service on the Court of Appeals and currently the Executive Assistant to Governor Atiyah. Mr. Johnson is the only Attorney General who has served in all three branches of the government of the state of Oregon. Our 10th Attorney General, James A. Redden, a Democrat, was elected in 1976. Interestingly enough, he had previously served in three sessions of the legislature and as state treasurer for one term. And Justice McAllister pointed out that he now sits as a federal judge for the United States District Court for the District of Oregon and is the only Attorney General of Oregon who has served on the federal bench. Our current Attorney General, James M. Brown, has gone the current inhabitant of the White House one better in shortening his name, and so apparently he prefers to be known as Jim. He was appointed by Governor Atiyah. He is a graduate of Yale University Law School. He will have served the shortest term of any Attorney General in our state's history. He has announced that he will enter private practice in Salem upon the expiration of his term. Mr. Brown is unique in another way as an Attorney General. Before assuming that office, he was politically decaffeinated by Governor Atiyah. The Sunday Oregonian ran an enlightening story on Mr. Brown with an appropriate current picture of him. And to make certain that that political decaffeination was temporary and for that office only, Mr. Brown was quoted as follows. If his involvement in public affairs leads him to a race for public office, he will not shy from that path, end quotes. That is a bit different version and with nicer language than the common one. I just could not resist the call of my fellow citizens to offer myself for this office. We are here today to see the swearing-in ceremony of the 12th Attorney General in the history of our state, David B. Frohnmayer. He was elected by a large majority of the voters of Oregon, a majority, I am sure, which exceeded the hopes of his most optimistic supporters. He was educated in the Medford Public Schools, received an A.B. degree from Harvard College, magna cum laude in government, elected to Phi Beta Kappa. He received an appointment to Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, and he received a B.A. degree from that institution. His J.D. degree was from the University of California Law School at Berkeley, Bold Hall, where he was elected to the Order of the Coif, and after that, he earned an M.A. degree from Oxford University. Certainly it can be said that Mr. Frohnmayer has the most outstanding academic credentials of anyone to hold the office of Attorney General. Can the new Attorney General write? I submit to you this evidence in answer to the question. He was winner of the Samuel Poole Weaver Constitutional Law Essay Competition of the American Bar Foundation in 1972 and again in 1974. That is one of the most prestigious awards available to any American lawyer. He also was winner of the Ross Essay Competition of the American Bar Association Journal in July 1980. His previous political activities have involved service in the Oregon House of Representatives in the sessions of 1975, 77, and 79. His prior employment has involved practice of law in San Francisco for 2 years with the firm of Pillsbury, Madison, and Sutro, and a 1 year stint as assistant to the United States Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, Washington, D.C., and immediately preceding his induction into office of Attorney General as Professor of Law at the University of Oregon Law School. Dave, I would say this to you, so there'll be no misunderstanding about it. When you ran for the office of Attorney General, all of your friends and supporters understood that you were offering this person who stood before them as a candidate, and that if elected, that person would serve the people of Oregon for 4 years. Is that your idea of the understanding, sir? We are clear so far. But that also involves, Dave, the understanding that you are to serve out your term as you were elected, and that means without facial adornment of any kind. I wanted to make that clear so that you would not feel called upon in any way to follow the example set by your immediate predecessor. Dave, I am sure that the members of your family and your friends who are gathered here for this ceremony would join me in saying that we were very proud of the campaign which you conducted. We congratulate you upon that overwhelming victory. We are certain that you will give outstanding service to the people of Oregon during your occupancy of the office of Attorney General. And we are equally certain that if at some time in the next century another speaker should have occasion to run down the list of previous attorneys general of the state of Oregon, he will say something like this, and with complete justification: the 12th Attorney General of Oregon was David B. Frohnmayer, a gentleman, a scholar, a fine citizen, and a great Attorney General. Thank you.
Thank you, Orlando. We come now to the main purpose of our meeting this morning, the administration of the oath of office. When I retired from the Supreme Court in December 1976, Professor Hans Lindy of the faculty of the University of Oregon Law School was appointed to fill a vacancy. Justice Lindy and Dave Frohnmayer's association goes back a long time. both graduated from the law school of the University of California, Berkeley, commonly known as Bold Hall. When he graduated from law school at Bold Hall, Mr. Justice Lindsay went to serve on the faculty of the University of Oregon Law School and served there until his appointment to the Supreme Court. In 1964, Justice Lindsay taught as a visiting professor at Bold Hall, where Dave Frohnmayer was then a student. A few years later, he persuaded the University of Oregon to bring David to Eugene to serve as a member of the law school faculty and counsel to the president. They taught two sections of the same course, an introductory course in public law for first semester students, which was unique in American law schools. They worked together on revisions of the State Administrative Procedure Act. They co-authored an article on the reform of the Oregon legislature. In view of their long shared interest in the quality of law and government in this state, it seems particularly fitting that Justice Lindy will administer the oath to David as Attorney General of Oregon. I give you Mr. Justice Lindy.
Will you raise your right hand? Repeat after me. I, David Frohnmayer.
I, David Frohnmayer.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Oregon.
And the Constitution of the State of Oregon.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
The duties of Attorney General of Oregon.
The duties of Attorney General of Oregon.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I always wanted that privilege. And so I want to thank the Speaker of the House, Hardy Myers, for the loan of his house for that final purpose. Governor Attia, Judge McAllister, Justice Lindy, distinguished state officials, Dean Hollis, my wife Lynn, members of the bench, fellow legislators, friends all. On my behalf of myself, my wife, and my family, I genuinely want to thank you for doing us the honor of sharing these few moments with us today. I'm acutely aware that I would not be on this rostrum today without the help and support of literally thousands of Oregonians, and the particularly strong support of so many people whom I see here today. And I want you to know that that is deeply, deeply gratifying to me and to my family. We very much appreciate not only the time you took throughout this very long year, but the special privilege and honor that you do us by coming here. I want to give my special thanks to the platform participants this morning. Justice McAllister is one of my earliest childhood memories of a distinguished Oregon citizen, a person I think who exemplified the notion of the citizen legislator in Oregon. I remember talking to him as a child about his experiences in Oregon government and being impressed by the selflessness and broad perspective that he brought to government in Oregon. And if there are people whom I've tried to emulate in my own public career, as people such as Bill McAllister, who have set that classic example very far and early back in my childhood. Justice McAllister, of course, went on to be Speaker of this Assembly and then entered onto a distinguished judicial career. But as I approach being a member of the executive branch, I become more and more taken by statements such as those that Justice McAllister made this morning, such as that the legislature in 1943 was perfectly capable of meeting and conducting its business within 60 days. And as I abandon my legislative role and go to the executive branch, I think there is more and more merit in that idea. at least as long as the Department of Justice budget emerges intact during that period of time. Governor Atiyah, I want to thank you not only for your support throughout the year, but for your strong and warm words today, which I trust will last beyond the first contrary opinion I give to the wishes and desires of your own personal staff. But I do want to say what a privilege it is to me and my family to have you sharing these ceremonies with us. Justice Lindy, of course, is an old friend of mine, first a teacher and then a colleague. It's my great honor to have him administer the oath of office to me today, a person who is not only distinguished on the court, but ranked nationally as a constitutional scholar of first rank, and known by his peers throughout the United States and indeed the world as being one of America's most eminent constitutional jurists. Dean Hollis, again, I appreciate your participation this morning. Some perhaps would think that you gave us Oregon's answer to the paper chase, or at least you were about ready to embark on that this morning. But I do appreciate your kind words, as well as the real elucidation and illumination you gave to all of us of the Office of Attorney General and of its history in the state of Oregon. I want to thank my wife, Lynn, for being here and enduring me through this last year. And perhaps it's appropriate that we have had these ceremonies on this, our 10th wedding anniversary. In that connection, I want to acknowledge and introduce my mother-in-law, Sue Johnson, who is on the far right in the audience, as well as my Aunt Gertrude Wilcox, my Aunt Minerva Meyer, my cousin Barbara Meyer, my cousin Jim Frohnmeyer, his mother Dorothy Frohnmeyer, and numerous other relatives, too numerous to mention. But I appreciate all of their support throughout this long year. I'm particularly pleased, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you are pleased to see the presence of the distinguished former attorneys general who've attended these brief ceremonies at my invitation. I think they do us all honor by their presence. Each of them individually is distinguished in his accomplishments in that office. Each of these persons stood for the integrity of the office of attorney general. And each of them, and I know this by virtue of hours of conversation with each of them, both prior to and subsequent to the election, has a deep commitment to that office, to its independence, to its integrity, to its innovation in the state of Oregon. And you know, in the career of every public official, but probably in the Attorney General's office as much as any, there are countless pressures, there are undoubtedly countless temptations, when the bottom line, to use the modern phrase, simply rests with the sense of moral courage and professional responsibility of the incumbent of that office. And in the case of the careers of each of these gentlemen who were introduced to you earlier, there are countless episodes which have been related to me by others of examples where they stood alone and made those tough kinds of decisions that have to be made if the office is to retain its integrity and its independence. Those were not decisions on which you would be elected to office. They were simply decisions which were important for the integrity of the office and important in view of the strong moral courage it took to make them. And because of that, I think that Oregonians should be especially proud of a rather unique situation with respect to the state of Oregon and this office of Attorney General. It has never once in its modern history been racked by scandal. Never once has its integrity been called into question. And when one reviews the history of this office in the states that are adjacent to us and indeed all of the rest of the 50 states of this union, one quickly becomes aware how rare that circumstance is. So those persons who are seated immediately in front of me, I think, have really given me a legacy. They have given that office high esteem by other public officials, by the electorate of the state of Oregon. They have established that that office is to be immune from political patronage, that it is to be independent, and that integrity is to be its watchword, that it's to behave itself with a high degree of professionalism and a commitment to public service. That's a commitment which I have already observed in the month since November, working with individual members of that department and noting their own high degree of professionalism, often at a very great degree of sacrifice, at least in terms of opportunities in the private sector, which they have foregone because of their commitment to public service. It will be a genuine joy for me to work with people under those circumstances. And I'm acutely aware that in working with those persons, I'm building on the legacy of the four men who are seated in front of me. And I think all Oregonians owe them a great debt of gratitude for establishing an office and a tradition of such high ethical behavior. I suppose I should set out for you very briefly my own objective in office, because I think I can summarize it briefly. And perhaps it is not modest, but at least it's an objective to shoot for. And that is to have and to build and continue to refine no less than the finest State Department of Justice in the entire United States. Building on the tradition that we already have in this state due to the work of countless who have gone before, I do believe that that is possible. And it is my sincere pledge to you to make sure that the Department of Justice is administered in such a way that that objective is reachable. I want to extend my particular thanks to Jim Brown and his accommodating nature in the course of this transition, which has been done without Ed Meese and $3 million, and with the utmost cooperation. And I want to assure you all that neither I nor my wife have asked Mr. Brown or his wife to vacate the premises at any date earlier than that at which I take office officially on January 5th. In closing, I want to thank you all for coming. I want to tell you that if I could ever live up to the epitaph which Dean Hollis suggested might possibly be read in the next century, that would be my highest aspiration. I want to thank you for your help and your support and the warmth of all the friendship that's demonstrated in this room. I want to encourage you to sign the guest book, which will be available in the governor's ceremonial office, which, as you exit through the southeast door, will be immediately down the hall. And I urge you all to attend the reception, which will be held immediately upon adjournment. Thank you very much for coming.
Dave may not have made it entirely clear, but we are all invited to proceed from here to the governor's ceremonial office, where there will be a reception, and we can mingle and meet one another and enjoy the rest of the morning. Thank you very much. The meeting is now adjourned.